On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we talk about what the Raiders should learn from the Super Bowl. We go over some offseason priorities. We talk about Tom Flores and Charles Woodson getting into the Hall of Fame. And Soto almost makes me cry, talking about Alex Smith's Comeback Player of the Year award. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. And we, of course, very much appreciate you subscribing, rating, and commenting on whatever platform you are listening on. Continue to do so. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. I'm RJ, he's Juan, and
boom.
Post-Super Bowl, the good news is, Juan, the Raiders have the best Super Bowl record in the AFC West.
Like it.
The Chargers have been one time, they lost. The Broncos have been eight times, they've only won three. And now the Chiefs are 2-2 in the Super Bowl, and the Raiders are 3-2. We got the best record in the Super Bowl in the AFC West, baby.
I like it.
So it's like we already won. You know what I mean?
We're definitely the best franchise in the AFC West.
Well, so the Raiders beat the Chiefs and lost to the Bucks by less. So technically that means the Raiders are Super Bowl champions.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and go along with that.
This math checks out. Get out your calculator.
It just works. Like, fuck. At least we scored a touchdown against the Bucks, right?
So so I was in Vegas the weekend of the Super Bowl. Working UFC, and I got back into town Sunday morning for the game. And everywhere I went, everyone's like, Chiefs minus three. Chiefs minus three. Easy money.
What?
Minus three.
Nope.
And it was like, and this is what I was saying. I'm with you. Like, Chiefs minus three sounds like a no-brainer. Even with missing two tackles, interior line a little beat up, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, yeah, we got this. No, not we, but like.
You know, we? What the fuck?
My bets. My bets.
Okay. This.
And then... And you realize, like, every seasoned veteran Las Vegas degenerate will tell you, you always go against the public. Because the public was just all about Chiefs minus three because it looked like easy money. And then late in the week, there were a couple, like, big fish that were, like, mixed. And so the sharps are on the Bucks. The publics, you know, are on the Chiefs. That's standard operating procedure for you to go Bucks. You always go with
all
the
day.
Sharps opposite the public. And I said to an Uber driver as I was getting dropped off at a casino, and I was like, yeah, like if I still think Chiefs minus three is the no-brainer, but if it goes that way, if it goes the Bucks win, then that's like the perfect doctrine for why you always go with the sharps against the public. And lo and behold, it panned out.
Public doesn't know shit.
Clearly.
God, I was so goddamn happy they didn't score a touchdown. Winfield, you're my new favorite player.
I do like that it was an ass-kicking one way or the other because, you know, as Raiders fans, it's like, all right, it's Tom Brady versus Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Just like, can't they just both forfeit? Can't there just be like so many injuries on both teams they can't throw a squad? Like, can't there be something like that? But at least like one dude had their shit pushed in. At least Patrick Mahomes just got completely embarrassed. So we can just make fun of Patrick Mahomes the entire offseason, you know?
I will never hate Tommy Tuck Rule less than I already do.
Okay.
I'm going to put that out there. Mm-hmm. At least it wasn't the fucking Pats. At least Belichick didn't get another one. All right? Mm-hmm. Bruce Arians, I got nothing against you, man. Used to wear those Kangol hats, looking like a freaking G. I like you. Cool, man. Mm-hmm. Too bad AB got one, but whatever.
Yeah, that's the other thing with Antonio Brown. It's like, I saw a tweet where it's like, he's like the epitome of the dude who does the group project and doesn't do shit, but gets an A+ anyway.
Yeah.
That was Antonio Brown. He's just like kind of shows up late, catches a couple touchdown passes during the postseason, and bam, he gets a ring. How fast does Antonio Brown's Super Bowl ring end up on eBay? to pay for some legal fees.
It's already there.
It's got to already be there, right? Like, he doesn't even actually even physically have it, but it's he's already looking for buyers.
He's already talked to guys like, yo, bro, I mean, I'll flip it to
he's
you.
Soliciting. He's soliciting buyers.
Even
he's
before the game. Money. Yeah, for sure.
So the other good news is that Patrick Mahomes supplants Rich Gannon as the worst Super Bowl performance from a quarterback in recent memory.
Dude, he had like under 100 yards in the first half or some shit like that.
Yeah, he didn't throw as many pick sixes as Richie the Cannon, but he did like, but at least Gannon got like some garbage time touchdowns. Patrick Mahomes couldn't get garbage time touchdowns. The game is over early fourth quarter. And they're like going for it on fourth down, like trying to just get like some mercy points. The Chiefs and Andy Reid still could not pull off a single TD. They could not sniff the fart smell of the end zone.
Todd Bowles and the Bucks were not having that shit.
No.
They knew they you know what it was? Honestly, it was Tyreek Hill and his fucking baby beaten ass chucking that deuce on the way to the end zone in the regular season. That shit, they're like, nope, we ain't having that again. Until the fucking last whistle blows, we are fucking putting it on these guys.
NFL players are like ex-girlfriends. Like, you just got to find like the little tiniest bit of motivation. And they just go off. Like, if you dump a chick and you even sort of like rub it in or even sort of make it like feel bad, she's like, all right, I'm going to the gym 9 days a week. I'm eating nothing but broccoli and water.
Yeah, I'm on a
busting my ass
smoothie
at work.
Diet.
I'm going to start wearing like Louis Vuitton, everything. I'm going to look and get some fake tits and I'm going to look amazing just to get back freaking, at that boyfriend.
Doing that whole body makeover in TJ.
And it worked. The Bucks played absolutely lights out. I will say this though. Like my big, like it's going to come off as a hot take, but my big like observation that no one else has shown is I really think Patrick Mahomes outplayed Tom Brady the way he was running for his life. He ran for 500 yards before getting sacked or throwing football. We all saw that stat. If you put Tom Brady behind that Kansas City Chiefs line, he would be dead. He would have given up a Super Bowl record for most sacks in a game, and he would still be in the hospital for how his body would have been maimed. Patrick Mahomes, despite not being able to throw a touchdown, only getting three field goals and play, you know, and the team's completely crap in the bed. Like he was going nuts. Like he was doing like diving for throws, running for his life. Like he legit, like he was more impressive than Tom Brady, despite what the stats say.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. If the queen had a dick, she'd be a king. Mm-hmm. And he fucking didn't get it done. It happens. I'm not going to give him any credit. Fuck him. Freaking Kermit the Frog. I'm not ever going to freaking root for a queef. So the free Kansas City queef.
I mean, you don't look, I'm not rooting for him either, but
No, you're kind of sucking his dick a little bit.
No. What I'm doing is I'm saying that Tom Brady played worse than a quarterback who couldn't score a touchdown.
That's not true.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Tom Brady moved the ball down the field.
Behind his amazing offensive line.
Completed passes. Look.
His receivers didn't drop balls the way Patrick Mahomes' receivers did.
Chiefs went in there with their balls all thick. They're going to go fucking run over these guys. We beat them before. We're going to beat them again. And the Bucks were like, listen, guys, this is not the same fucking game. It's not the same game. Step your shit up. They showed up fucking dancing and doing all this stupid shit. Yeah. The Bucks did their dancing afterwards. And you didn't see the Bucks doing all that shit before the game. They did that shit after the game. Before the game, the Chiefs were this and that and fucking all this and like whatever. No, you got to come correct, because there are certain things as like hot routes and all that shit that they weren't doing right. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to put it all on Mahomes, but after the first couple of series, when you're seeing that how bad you're getting beaten, you have to change it up a little bit. You have to run some draws, run some screens. But the thing is, fuck, man, you want to talk about the tackles and the two outside rushers making a big deal for the Bucks. But, dude, their linebackers and their secondary played an even better game. Mm-hmm. So when they started running the ball a little bit more, when they started running the screen game, that shit wasn't working, dude. White was all over the place. And all the DBs were freaking all up in their nuts, not letting the receivers get any room, not letting fucking Kelsey's little bitch ass get any room. And so see what you got to say about it, man. But they played it wasn't all the tackles, man. They played hard.
It was a big part.
And well, I mean, it was a big part of it. But you know what? With Mahomes' ability to throw the ball late and just wing it and get it to where he needs to get it, but the next two levels of the defense still have to play and be sharp throughout the game, and they were. So it wasn't all the pass rush, because the second and third level still had to play really well, and they both played great.
I think the Chiefs just started to like the smell of their own farts. And
yeah, man.
They were just going to stroll into Tampa Bay and just be like, oh, yeah, we're going to go back-to-back, no problem. We got Patrick Mahomes. We got Andy Reid. We got Tyreek Hill. We got the tight end that will remain nameless. We got this already figured out.
Oh, I said his name, didn't I?
Yeah.
Oh, God damn it. Bleep that shit out.
Wash your mouth out with soap. Did your mom ever wash your mouth out with soap as a kid when you said a bad word?
No, she just knocked the teeth out of my mouth.
Like, joke's on you, Mom. Now I don't have to brush my teeth.
Yeah, I have to brush my teeth. I have to brush that one ever again.
Did you see Patrick Mahomes' baby mama, Brittany Matthews, on Twitter?
No, what'd you say?
So, was it ESPN or the Sports Center? The Sports Center Twitter, just as they do, right? As everyone on Twitter does. Mm-hmm. They posted a photo of Patrick Mahomes looking like not even that distraught. He's just kind of like looking like kind of like blank stare, like shit. And there's 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter and the score is 31-9. And it's just a shot of Patrick Mahomes helmet on, you know, in between plays, just a little sad, not even like crying, not distraught, nothing. And she tweets, y'all are garbage, 3 garbage emojis for this too, but he looks damn good to me. You can tell that she has never, ever seen any criticism of Patrick Mahomes in their life. If this is like what like blows her skirt up and gets her panty in a bunch.
This can be a pivotal thing for the Queefs going forward, man, because say what you want to say about personnel and all that shit. No one says anything about the Raiders missing offensive linemen when they played the Bucks in the Super Bowl. No one even gives a shit. So that's not even going to be a narrative.
Our center went AWOL 48 hours before.
No. And the thing is our center was Rodney Hudson before Rodney Hudson to our offense. He's the guy that made all the calls. Gann didn't make the protection calls. He didn't switch the line calls at all. That was all Brent Robbins. Mm-hmm. He was gone. And that fucked everything up for our protection. And so nobody outside of the Raider fans really talk about that. And that loss, nobody outside of KC is ever going to say anything going forward, because all they're going to remember is the final score. And they didn't score a touchdown. And look at this offense and this and that. This is legit criticism on their part, because as high power an offense as they had, you weren't facing a 85 Bears or 2003, 2001, something like that, the Ravens. Mm-hmm. You weren't facing the NASCAR. You weren't facing the NASCAR defense from the Giants. Like, you weren't facing that kind of defense.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just like chill here for a second. The defense played great that day. They were a top, you know, what, 8, 7, 8, something like that. So, I mean, come on.
Tampa Bay was 8th in scoring defense this season.
Eighth.
So which it's is like, really good.
It's good, but it's not 9 points good.
Yeah.
You just shit the bed. Just call it what it is.
They like the smell of their own farts. They thought, and this is what happens. And you see this all the time with people who aren't used to success. And the Kansas City Chiefs aren't used to success until like 3 seasons ago, right? Like until they won the Super Bowl last season. Mm-hmm. They were a franchise that wasn't used to success. You can even, you know, sort of make the case for the Raiders these days, like when they start 6-3, 6-4 and then fall apart. Right. Yeah. You can tell they're not used to success. And those are the people those are the dudes in like pickup basketball that drain like 2 threes in a row and just start talking mad shit, even though they won't play defense. And even though they're not that good, it's because they're just not used to it. They're just not used to success. And so you start believing your own hype very, very quickly. The guys that know it, that have been successful their whole lives, or franchises that have a lot of success, they don't like the smell of their own farts. They don't believe their own hype because they're, they know how fleeting it is, and they know what it, and they've been there before, and it doesn't go to their head the same way it does to a franchise like the Chiefs.
Well, the thing is, I mean, Tommy Tuchel, say what you want to say about him. He knows how to win, you know, and he knows what it takes from an organizational standpoint to win. And he brought that to the Bucks. Nobody on the Bucks was not prepared. Nobody on the Bucks was not ready to go. Nobody on the Bucks was not expecting to play their best game for a specific reason. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, I got to play hard. I got to do this. I know what I have to do. I'm keying in on the key points that I need to make. I need to hit to have my best game, as opposed to on the Queef side, they're just like, oh yeah, we got this shit. We're going to step on the field and it's over. They're going to give us 21 points just for stepping on the field. Mm. Like, I mean, people that are successful, they wait and show you, and then they'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. Right. They'll knock your dick in the dirt and then they'll talk about it. And, oh, you want some more? Okay, well, I'll give you some more. And they know what to do after that. They know, because they know why they're successful. It's not just that, oh yeah, I'm going to be successful. It's like, this is why I'm going to be successful.
You can't cut a good promo after a crap performance.
No way.
The promo is only as good as the performance.
Yep.
Right. Like, you've reached that ceiling. I'm glad you brought up, like, so what does this tell us about the Raiders? What does Super Bowl LV? God, it should have been in Las Vegas. Cause it's been perfect. Oh, right. 55 LV. Oh, perfect. What does this last Super Bowl tell us about the Raiders, about Derek Carr, and about the Raiders' future? Well, I did some math, busted out the TI-83 calculator.
You got it.
Just kidding. I pulled it from Twitter. But I looked up. Tom Brady has been to the Super Bowl 10 times, right? 10 times he's been. Mm-hmm. The regular season defensive rankings of those teams are as such. These are points allowed per game where they're ranked. And you can guess where I'm going with this, right?
Yep.
Pats 2001, 7th. 03, 6th. 04, 2nd. Uh-huh. 07, 4th. And here's the outlier. This was his bad defense. 2011, 15th. An average defense. That was his bad defense. 2014, 8th. 2016, 1st. Best defense in football. 2017, 5th. 2018, 7th. And then this last year in Tampa Bay, 2020, 8th. That is the key to success. So to your theory that the Raiders can't win a Super Bowl with Derek Carr as quarterback without, you know, some monstrous defense. Clearly a great defense is going to help our Super Bowl chances. Like, I'm not fighting you there by any means. Mm-hmm. But you're saying it has to be a Pro Bowl quarterback or a defense. What I want to say to you is, Soto, the defense often makes the Pro Bowl quarterback. As good as, obviously Tom Brady is a Pro Bowl quarterback, right? He's like a Pro Bowl or a Hall of Fame quarterback like three times over, right? Obviously that's the case. But he only got to the big game on the back of an amazing defense. If he never had great defenses, he would never be going to Super Bowls. And so that's what I'm saying is, you're right. Like, we need good quarterback play and we need a good defense to win Super Bowls. But the idea that, well, it's got to be one or the other, Hall of Fame or great defense. Great defenses make Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Like, quarterbacks win Super Bowls. Eli Manning is going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback with a 500 record because his defense won him Super Bowls. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Let me take a look, and it's my homework for the week. I'll take a look at all the Super Bowl winning defenses and see where they're ranked. Because you just pulled up Tom Brady's, just happened to have one of the best defensive coordinators in football ever as their head coach. So let's just see some other Super Bowl winners and see where their defense is ranked. You know, my big thing with Carr is both all four quarterbacks, the final four. All four of those quarterbacks can make plays outside of the offense, outside of the play called. And that's my big issue with Carr. He doesn't concede. I mean, Hill said it. Heidi Fang said it. He doesn't take the risks when he needs to. And that's an issue. That's an issue. And I feel that is where he needs to improve. And I mean, it's, who are the final four? Brady, Kermit the Frog, Aaron Rodgers,
Allen.
And Allen. All four of those dudes make plays outside of the playbook.
Yeah.
And that's my major concern with Carr. Inside of the playbook, no problems whatsoever. But there's time comes where you have to do that little extra, man. You have to make plays outside of the playbook consistently. When you
Derek Carr's not like useless there. Like he's made some big plays. You're right. Like he plays within his offense,
and that's why he's labeled a game manager. Because I don't think it's unfair to label him that. But this is the reason why.
I think it is now.
I don't know, man. Look,
I think it is now.
Until he proves that he can make those plays when he needs to, then we could talk about it. Because
he has done it.
No, he hasn't, man.
One or two in like fourth quarter and overtime comebacks since he's been in the league. Like the stats are there. Look, he's getting better every season in this. Like his yards per throw, his breakdown plays, like every single season under John Gruden, he's improved in all those realms. But he's already been, but like Dan Helly said, he's been labeled a game manager. And once you have that label, but he's progressing so much further beyond that. Like, I don't think he is anymore. I mean, he's not Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes, but he's not like the dude from the Rams who just got like traded. Like he's not Jared Goff. He's not just like, all right, I have read 1, 2, and 3 and then it's going to fall over. It doesn't happen. It's not him anymore.
But let me ask you a question. The guys, the final four that were in the final four this year, the quarterbacks, they didn't grow into that. They were that. When they started, they were that. They had that in them. They had that little extra in them. And something that you're not going to see in the stats is my defense is terrible. I need to make sure that I get touchdowns, during these drives. And throwing a ball into the seats on second down because nothing is there. Throwing the ball into third, you know, little things like that. Not taking those chances that he knows he needs to take to preserve his stats. Because
you think he's a stat chaser, or
I'm not saying he's doing it for it. I'm saying it is preserving his stats.
Okay,
he needs to throw. It's going to sound weird saying this, but he needs to throw more interceptions because he's pushing the ball down the field more. Especially with a bad defense, you need to do that, man. You can't win with a defense like that if you're not scoring points, if you're not scoring at an elite level, because you're
giving people are punching bad. Their iPods right now hearing you say he needs to throw more interceptions. But I do get what you're saying. Like, again,
he needs to push the ball more.
There's a phrase in gambling where if you're a great gambler, you should be winning about 55-60% of your bets, right? If you're getting like 80-90% of your bets correctly,
not betting enough.
Exactly. You're leaving money on the table because you're barely betting. You're only betting the sure things where it's just insane. And I think that's the same thing with Derek Carr, right? Like he's keeping his turnovers down. Not this year. It was terrible. But
the fumbles were bad.
The fumbles are awful.
That killed him.
That's clearly the biggest thing he needs to work on. But he's keeping his interceptions generally down the last few seasons. But how many touchdowns is it costing us because he's keeping those interceptions down? It's impossible to know for sure, but I think that's a fair criticism. But I also think that's what John Gruden wants of him, and that's how the offense is built. It's to keep turnovers down.
The problem with that type of offense is it only wins when you have a good defense.
Yeah.
If you don't have and that's my thing here. He knows the team he has, and he's not playing to win. I'm not saying he doesn't want to win.
Are you saying John Gruden or Derek Carr?
Both. Okay. Both. They're not playing to their team. It's what we killed Gunther on. Oh, this is my freaking, this is my scheme. This is what I play. You guys have to play it. Gruden is calling, this is my offense. This is how you have to play it. He's not like, hey man, my defense licks sweaty ball sack. I need to freaking put the ball up in the air, regardless of if I trust my receivers or not, because guess what? This defense ain't stopping a fucking nosebleed. And that's how you have to play it, man. I would have much rather have that happen, because what I hate is having a mid-teens fucking draft pick. Because those teams are stuck there for years. those, not every single one, but a big chunk of them are stuck in that middle ground. And that's the worst thing ever in the NFL. You don't want to be in those middle picks of a round. Cause that means it's like, all right, I'm not going to get the best pick, but I'm like, I'm almost there. So like, I don't want to blow it up because I'm close and I'm almost there. And you just happen, it just happens every fucking year. 7-9, 8-8. Then you maybe get a 10-6, or then in the next year you get, you know, a 5-11 or whatever. But you're in that middle group there. You're not super shitty where you get a top pick and you're not an elite group, but you're just in that middle ground and you're just a team. You're just a filler. That's all you are. So we'll see what happens this offseason if we actually get players that they need, not just guys that are, oh, he's a grinder. I don't want no fucking grinders. Gruden, if you're listening, by any stroke of God that you're actually listening to this shit, quit with the fucking grinders, bro. We need fucking players. We need alpha presence. We need needle movers, both sides of the ball on all levels. Get that shit.
We need Mayock to roofie Gruden on draft day, just God, so he doesn't just get just, like, oh, get all man. Horned up on some random dude because he's like the son of two like army brats and he has like a hard work ethic.
Yeah, man. I don't want that lunch pail motherfuckers, bro. Have the lunch pail motherfuckers be on special teams.
Well, this is the problem. This is the issue. Like, I'm not against saying the lunch pail dudes is the way to go and saying, all right, let's ignore like the super cocky, but super fast wide receiver, or, you know, the ball hawk dudes. Like, okay. I'm actually kind of down for that system because I think the Eagles, when they won the Super Bowl, were the best example of like, not a super talented team, but they were all just jiving together perfectly. Like, it was such a team. Everyone had their back. They won a fucking Super Bowl with Nick Foles, right? Like that replicating that, I don't think is terrible. The problem is we're swinging and missing left and right on those guys. Like, for a team and a coaching staff that's preaching lunch pail dudes, Gruden grinders, teamwork guys,
I'm getting so sick.
Why is our rent a wide receiver Nelson Aguilar having to scream at everybody in the locker room after losses? Like, you're supposed to be drafting and picking up guys that are self-motivators and bring everybody up. And yet back-to-back seasons were falling apart late in season. No one's really becoming like a leader that's grabbing everybody's attention and getting everybody in line. If that was your strategy, John, okay, but it's not working. We're not getting grinders.
Who's won anything on the Raiders? Who's won anything?
Aguilar had a ring, but I guess that's why he's the one guy.
He's the guy that actually was the one. He saw what it needed to win. He saw the switch that needed to be turned.
Derek Carr won the WAC, in all fairness, for Fresno State.
Oh, fuck out of here with that. Look, man.
Do you remember Derek Carr as a Bulldog? I mean, few people were do.
Yeah, really. He played USC his last year in college in the bowl game, and he got his fucking shit pushed in.
Dude, they were a vert offense.
Yeah,
four wide, four verts.
Devontae Adams.
Bam, dude. and he would just sling them like that. Like that Derek Carr at Fresno State, that Derek Carr in 2016 exists. Like. Again, I've just seen that version of Derek Carr so many times. I think he's just such like a team player, yes sir, no sir guy, that he's just doing what John Gruden's telling him to do.
So I'm not going to put it all on Gruden. I'm not going to put it all on Carr. It's both of them. It's both of them together. Because in the groups, in the meetings, in the preseason, offseason, look, man, we need to push the ball more. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to push the ball more. If you don't like it, fucking trade me somewhere. I'm going to push the ball. I'm going to try to win these games. They know what they have. They know the team they have. What the fuck are they playing this fucking field goal game for when they know their fucking defense is not playing well? I'm not going to say they're a bad defense, but they're playing very bad.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, man. But who on
the offense was that home run threat other than Darren Waller, right? Like,
I mean, really you have one. You have an elite one.
You have one, right? But
and he's elite.
He's elite. Okay. He's insane. He's amazing, right? But like, other than that, it's like, all right, guys, we're just gonna go four verts. We're just gonna go Hail Marys. We're just gonna like.
Look, man, if I knew, I would be an offensive coordinator in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But I'm not. All I know is there are other teams out there with less talent that we have on offense that are pushing the ball down the field.
Like who? I'm curious. Who you think
like the fucking Texans?
The Texans were 4-12.
You asked me a specific question about pushing the ball down the field.
Okay.
Okay. And they did. So there's
your answer. Deshaun Watson got a ton of yards, but nothing else because it was a crap team.
Okay. Well, now you're looking at the okay. Now we're not having two different arguments right now. Okay. I'm saying push the ball down the field more. That's what I said it from the very fucking beginning. You have to push the ball down the field if you're the Raiders. You can't go for this nickel and dime bullshit because you have to be perfect. You have to be perfect. And it's like the reason why the Raiders were so good on third downs is because they got a ton of third downs because they were pushing the ball first and second down. They were always had third downs. Mm. So you just got to know your team, man. And you got to push the ball down the field.
I think you're going to like the offense next season if the line can come back together because – I rewatched a bunch of Henry Ruggs games the last couple of weeks in a lot of specific plays. And I think when he hurt his knee in like week, was it three or something? Like he tweaked his knee real early in the season. And then he can no longer like cut the way that he used to. Like he could still run vertically, but like he couldn't cut like he could in college. And so I think that was a bigger issue than they let on. So I think I think just going to get better, right? Just being one season better, not a rookie anymore. Yeah. I think that's a big one. Darren Waller's only getting better. Derek Carr gets better under the system every single season. And there is a metric shit ton of really good wide receivers available, either through the draft or in free agency. I mean,
we just got to get them, man.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, this is the one time, because obviously the Raiders need to dump basically all of their offseason resources in the defense, right? Offense played great. I think they're all going to get better. Defense played atrocious at every single level. Defensive line, linebacker, DB, like unquestionably terrible everywhere, right?
Wins off the books. Joyner, got to go. Williams, got to go. Incognito, gone. Mm-hmm. Brown, gone. Mariota, I'm hearing this trade buzz. There's interest in him. Get him off the books,
too. Take anything for him because we're not paying him $10 million next season to sit on the bench.
Take whatever. Take a sixth rounder for him. Sweet, I'll take it. Whatever it is, just take it.
Anything.
Okay? All these free agents, Collins, Mariota, Brown, Incognito, Williams, Joyner, they can all go because none of them played a pivotal role on our team this year.
Yeah.
None of them did. So we found other guys to fill in the roles. And nobody on this list, their backup wasn't absolutely got off like, oh, my God, this guy's fucking terrible. No. The offensive line played all right. Mm-hmm. You know. Backup and quarterback, the defensive tackle, he just didn't play well. Let's just fucking call it what it is. Get another one in here.
I would say that Mariota is drastically better than Nathan Peterman, but not $10 million. But not $10 million.
No. That's ridiculous. You need that. He's not better than Nathan Peterman as far as moving the needle on your team than that money on the defense would be.
Yeah,
with the right guy. So. That's what I was saying, you know, last year. Fucking get rid of all these guys. Get rid of them all. And it's not that I have anything against them personally, but they weren't needle movers on our team.
Yeah.
Even as good as Brown was on our team, he wasn't a needle mover on the offensive line because, I mean, even without him, they didn't play terrible.
I mean, really, all we really need is a little bit more line depth. Depends what they do with, like, Jalen Rich. Like, running back kind of depends what they're going to do. I would love to have Devontae Booker back. He played great. I don't know if they're going to give Jalen Richard $3.5 million because like he'll be making more than Jacobs. And that's kind of like, that's a little, so they might get rid of him. So a little running back depth, a little offensive line depth, but then just go after a number one receiver only because it's a buyer's market. Only because there's a ton of them available. Get a
good deal on one. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a report today that like Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be targeted by that. Like you can't believe all these reports because it's managers and GMs. Yeah,
watched the football team was calling for Carr and I saw all that shit.
I don't doubt that teams are calling for Carr, but it's just fishing. It's just, like he's not fishing. Going anywhere. Yeah. He's not going anywhere.
What do you think about the report? What do you think about Mark Ingram for the Hammer?
I'd be down again. Veteran presence, a guy that's won a ring. Dude, like
some of the scary shit. Did he win with the Saints? I don't think he was there.
He never won a ring. No. Okay. But a guy that's, you know, experienced him in the playoffs and all that.
Experienced playoffs. Some of the scariest formations that I ever saw with the Saints was with Ingram and Kamara in the backfield together. that shit was nuts.
Yeah.
Because they can both do, I mean, Ingram is a better pass catcher than people give him credit for. But, dude, they were both, if you could have Ingram and Jacobs in the same backfield, you have that, what Hill called for when he was on our show. He said, yeah, you know, they don't have that hammer at the end of the game to kill the clock. They're using Jacobs. He's just not big enough, man. Yeah. It's nothing personal against him, but he just keeps getting hurt. And we need to preserve him. We need to have another guy that could tote the rock and be productive and be that hammer, okay? Be that thunder to the lightning of Jacobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, Edwards, I have a lot of hope in Edwards going forward.
That's, I have the same thing, but it's all hope right now still.
Yeah.
Still, it's and still.
You still, if you're the Raiders, you still have to sign that number one receiver because you don't know. All the signs are there. Pre-draft, a college career.
What's the most you'll spend on a receiver on a free agent, wide receiver? What's the most you'll spend?
That's hard to say because you don't know the market yet.
Because all the reports I'm seeing is like, yeah, like Allen Robinson's going to go for like 18. He's going to go for like 18 to 20, like an Amari Cooper number. I'm like, in a bubble, he's worth it, but not. But like in this right buyer, with a salary cap that's going to be like $30-40 million less.
Something 12, maybe
10 to 12. Yeah.
No, I mean, fucking Williams got 11 on our ass. So, I mean, yeah.
But again, that was a different time. That was when, like, we were desperate for a receiver. The salary cap was only going up. Like, I think 10 or 11 gets us Juju Smith-Schuster or...
We have to probably go 12 or 13.
Maybe
a huge difference. But I think a 12, 13, maybe a little bit more backloaded with some incentives, or maybe like a 12 with some incentives would really... would be something that'd be a little bit more feasible, I think. I wouldn't spend the 18. That's fucking ridiculous.
I think the first priority, I think, is safety. Like a veteran, amazing Justin Simmons, Marcus May. Like that is so a veteran safety that can be the general for all those young guys. Take all the coverage responsibilities away from Abram. Like our pass rush is more important, but I think a veteran free safety is... has a wider effect, right? So I think that's like priority one. Whatever, like I'm the one of the cheapest dudes in the world, but I'm one of those like whatever it costs to get an amazing, good veteran freeze, not draft one, not a young 23-year-old safety, safety.
I wouldn't even tab you as cheap. I'd say that you're careful. Mm. Like you'll spend the money if it's worth it.
I'm a value guy.
Yeah, you spend them. I mean, you're not even value guy. Like you, even if it's expensive, you'll still spend it if it's worth it.
Yeah.
If it's worth it, and that's what the Raiders got to do. At this point right now, we don't need, and we don't have the ability for depth. Mm-hmm. So let's not worry about getting all these different pieces. Let's just get depth at linebacker. And like, no, let's get the fucking rock stars that we need at the levels that we need them. On the defense, that's all three levels.
Yeah.
Sorry to say.
Yeah. So that's why I think like free safety priority, like that's where the number one money goes. Number two money goes to pass rushers, either edge or defensive tackle. Either way works. I think you can move, you know, Clay inside for certain situations, leave Max alone.
I like a D tackle, a pass rushing disruptive D tackle, because those guys make your linebackers better. Yeah. They keep the mud off your linebackers' feet. Make those lanes a little bit easier. So that's something I'm looking
spend at. There. And then I do want a free agent wide receiver. I don't want to go to the draft for wide receiver because we have so many young ones, right? No. Ruggs second year, you know, even like our, you know, good, like Renfro is like the veteran now, right? Like he's great and he's reliable, but come on, like we need like a veteran wide receiver on the team. Yeah. And then after that, you can basically do everything else with the draft, like pick up a great linebacker, you know, in the draft, like early in the draft, that's even Ed Rutgers in the draft, offensive lineman in the draft.
That's all the noise in the first rounds of first, second rounds of mock drafts is that Jeremiah Owosu-Koramoa, okay. That his name? The linebacker from Notre Dame. Let's just call him JOK, all right?
Okay.
Just Jay. Between us. He's NFL.com had him as the Raiders first round pick. Brooks, Zierlein, McShay, they all had him. Fucking Kiper had JOK as the number 14 prospect. So it falls in line. So right in the ballpark there, you know, 14th mm-hmm. prospect. We're picking 17. But, man, I mean, it wouldn't be a bad signing. A good thing, one of his big thing is he's a side on the sideline linebacker. He's fast. He can play well in coverage. Is what he did well at Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. So I'm good with anything that's going to help our defense. That's what I'm good for. I mean, we look Raekwon. We're losing him. The best name in the NFL. But he's going to be a free agent. Probably not going to bring him back. This could be something that can really help us out. But I don't want us to sign the Carl Nassibs of the world because he was never a needle mover to begin with. He was never a needle mover. That was a terrible signing. What the fuck are you doing giving him all that money? Even before he freaking stepped on the field. I'm not here to talk about anyone's money, but as far as
I am, that shit went to somebody else.
Even the pre-production, I mean, even preseason, it's like, come on, man. Like, this is not a needle mover. We need these needle movers. We need these players. And come on, let's just get this fucking shit done. Let's just stop with the fucking grinders. I'm tired of this shit.
Well, we got the rest of the offseason to talk about the offseason. But a couple, history-making moments this last week. Tom Flores, Chucky Woodson, going to the Hall of Fame where they should have been. You know, Flores obviously should have been there a long time ago.
A long time ago, right?
Coached two Super Bowls. First minority coach and so first minority coach and player in so many different categories. And not just that, like, he coached in a great era, right? Like, he coached against Chuck Knoll, Don Shula, Bill Parcells, Walsh, Cowher, Landry. Like, he coached against all these dudes. And he had winning records against basically all of them. Hall of Fame coaches. 6-1 against Don Shula. 3-1 against Chuck Knoll. 3-1 against Bill Parcells. 2-1 against Bill Walsh. 2-1 Bill Cowher. 2-1 against Tom Landry. The only ones he kind of struggled against, Marv Levy, he was 3-5. He was 1-3 against Joe Gibbs, but that one was a Super Bowl. They hogtied and smashed the Redskins in the Super Bowl. 23-15 against Hall of Fame coaches in his career. Just
it just doesn't make sense. Awesome. Like, he was just taking this left off for so long.
He's just quiet, and they just ignored him.
Yeah, he was quiet. Maybe the Raiders didn't have as big of a push. I don't know what was going on with him and Al Davis at the time. I think Al Davis was still alive when he first was eligible. But I don't know if he – one of the things about Al Davis is he expected the entire league to feel about the Raiders the way he did. Like, oh, we're the Raiders. Like, well, okay, well, other people don't give a shit. Yeah, they had to make a little bit more noise. So I think this year it's like, hey, man, I think people just like some random person was just like, fuck, why is he not in the Hall of Fame?
I need to give credit where credit is due. I'm gonna give credit to Coors Light.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say Coors Light. They fucking,
hey, man. You could guilt Hall of Fame voters. You can guilt them. You're like, hey, guys, like, I know he's not like the sexy name, not a guy that's in your face all the time. He's not on TV ever. Like, you forget about Tom Flores because he's a humble dude, but like, look at the resume and look at
that's the thing
put
that's
in there
the
over
thing.
Tom Flores.
It's not guilting him. It's just saying, hey, guys, wait. Take a couple of beats here and look at these numbers. Why not? Oh, by the way, he's also the first minority coach in the NFL. First minority coach to win a multiple, not just one, but two Super Bowls. This guy should be in. He's not a fluke guy where he had a great team. No, he got 2 in 3 years. First team, first wild card team to win the Super Bowl. So, I mean, the guy had the resume, and he ended it. The thing is the fact that he was pushed off for so long, is that's more of a travesty than it's good that he got in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And C Wood, I don't know who the fuck didn't think he was going to get in.
Yeah. And everything that Tom, like the resume, like, they're both amazing. And just by pure resume, they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. But Charles Woodson was everything flashy that Tom Flores wasn't, right? ESPN
and he's on
analyst,
TV
on TV all the time, got the ascot and looking clean, looking sharp. Like, he's Heisman Trophy winner, national champion.
I don't know who lines him up because he's always lined up perfect.
clean. He's got to have his own guy. He's got like a traveling barber with him or something. So he's like everything that Tom Flores wasn't on the flashy side, right? He's he's all steak and sizzle, whereas Tom Flores was all steak, no sizzle. You knew Seawood was getting in right away.
Yeah, for sure. And he deserved it. It wasn't like it was just some marketing ploy or whatever. He fucking deserved it. I don't think anyone has any problems with him getting in.
So my my senior year Sadie Hawkins dance. Oh, yeah. Me and my date, my girlfriend at the time.
This. You got to post this picture. The whole thing.
I'll see if I can. It's on my Instagram, but I'll see if I can post it on this vid somewhere. But my 17 years old, my girlfriend and I went to Sadie Hawkins, and we wore Charles Woodson rookie jerseys in 2001 for our Sadie Hawkins dance date. Fast forward 20 years later. He's going in he got the Hall of Fame jacket, and I married her. Like,
I was there.
You were there. That's what Charles Woodson like means to the Clifford family. You know, he's embedded in this.
If anyone looks at that picture, you'll notice how Mexican they both look.
my dyed black hair.
Yo, it was perfect. You look super Mexican because you were dark. And
Vicky had her eyebrows all like super thin, like in the 2000s. Oh god,
it was so sweet. And those jeans you were wearing,
the Ralph Lauren with the hammer holder on the side.
Oh, so good.
Shit back then. Baggy as hell.
Can't even see your feet.
Suburban Orange County with like the baggiest jeans.
Super sweet. Trust me, guys, you're gonna want to go ahead and look at this.
So I'll post it somewhere. So we're gonna have a really great Hall of Fame special when they do the induction in August. Like we're gonna do a big show on the two Raiders getting in there.
Can we get drunk during that show?
I'll allow it because you asked so nicely. Quick sad news, we'll mention it. Marty Schottenheimer passed away, obviously, longtime coach for the Chargers. There's a great Marty Schottenheimer story that I want to share. That I wonder if you guys remember this. 2001, back when RJ's wearing Ralph Lauren jeans. Deion Sanders wanted to retire over playing for Schottenheimer in Washington. If you remember that. So in 2002, Schottenheimer coached the Chargers. That was his first season with the Chargers. Washington released Deion Sanders so he could join the Raiders to go on that Super Bowl run. So Schottenheimer claimed Deion on waivers just to block the move. They had the waiver wire position. He claimed Deion Sanders just to cock block him to ring chase with us Raiders. Now, I remember how pissed I was, but 20 years looking back, I'm like, I got to respect that. I got to respect a dickish move to an AFC West foe.
He clearly deserved to die. So
Spited him. He's like, all right, the clock's ticking. That
was a joke. Hey, RIP Shoddy, you were a underrated NFL coach. I don't know why you didn't get another shot after going 14-2. I don't know why. Maybe people are on the league and do something that we don't, but you deserved a better exit from the NFL. I saw your story on ESPN, how your wife just been you pieces of shit don't have great wives late in life. You know what I'm saying? You'll have a piece of shit that has a young wife. She's going to get tired of his ass eventually, or he's going to clean up his act. But you know, by and large, for the most part, if you're a solid, solid dude, you're going to have a solid, solid wife.
Yeah.
And that woman, God bless her, she was a rock for him. And that was a great piece. If you guys haven't seen it, it's a piece on Marty Schottenheimer and him dealing with Alzheimer's just what he has to go. Some of it was heartbreaking, man. He's talking about, every morning I wake up and it's kind of cold, and here in Pennsylvania, they're living in like South Carolina. They haven't lived in Pennsylvania for like 30 years. Just shit like that, man. And it was tough to watch, man. It was tough to watch, but just knowing the fact that, you know, he had such an amazing wife there, you know, there was a lot of love in that house. So Shoddy, RIP, buddy.
So what you're saying is it's only a matter of time before Vicky dumps my ass once I'm old.
I'm surprised she's still with you.
Me too.
Honestly.
We're actually due for a breakup with the many times we broke high school and now.
Hey, stop saying that shit, man. Don't put that shit out there.
I'm reverse jinxing it.
So no, you can't.
It's not?
It's out there now.
Okay.
Fuck.
Last thing, and you sent this to me earlier in the week, the incredible video. We'll post the Motti Schottenheimer thing on our Twitter at the Windbags, and we'll also post this Alex Smith video that you were talking about. You were adamant we get to this, Soto. Why were you so adamant about it?
You know, it's people don't see the road back, and it's tough. You know, Alex Smith won the 2020 Comeback Player of the Year, and he well deserved.
He won it the second he stepped onto the football field in week 8. Like
The second he made the team and he was on the roster, that's when he's the Comeback Player of the Year. Mm-hmm. I was in a pretty serious car accident, and I didn't have any visible breakages or injuries. I had a brain injury, which explains a lot. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was tough. It was tough because people would look at you and be like, "Oh, you're fine, you're good," and you're like, I don't know what your name is. Or looking at Alex Smith and all the little things he had to go through, and it's not even like the infections and the surgeries and all that stuff, but like just starting over after every surgery.
Yeah.
And having to learn to walk again and learn to run again and just look down at your leg and look at how fucked up your leg looks. You know, it took me like about 8 months to start driving again after my accident. And I had never, ever locked my keys in my car, not one time in my whole life. The first month I started driving, I did it 6 times. Mm. Just my memory was terrible. I forgot where I parked all the time. And I had to keep post-it notes and stick them to remind me, hey, take a picture of where you parked on your phone so you know where you parked, right? And, just learning to use my memory again. And coming back from something like that and knowing how difficult that was, and just watching his story and how difficult it was for him to get back. All praise to Alex Smith. He's a former queef, but he's a former one. So it had to have been brutal. And he not only does he have to be super tough, number one, but just have that undying belief in himself, like he's going to be able to make it, but also have that support system, because there was times I'm not ashamed to say it. I had to go to speech and cognitive therapy. I had my tongue felt like it was 3 times.
And that was before you got in the car accident.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I couldn't talk. I couldn't remember shit. And there was times I just didn't want to go back. And I was just resigning myself to the fact that I'm going to stay this way. I'm not going to get any better the rest of my life. And I'm okay with it because I didn't want to do it anymore. Mm. But no, you know, I was pushed to keep going. And I saw young people. They were in their late teens, early 20s, that had maybe not as significant on paper an injury as I had, that were quitting left and right. And it was heartbreaking because you see these kids like, man, they're going to be that way. They're plateaued. They're not going to get any better if they're not going to do the work. But then you see Alex Smith go through 17 surgeries, almost lose his leg, and not just be able to walk and carry his kids and run and be active, but play in the NFL and do a good job of it. You know, lead his team in, although it was a losing record, lead his team to the playoffs. So good job for Alex Smith and his family. That's an entire family award, the Comeback Player of the Year for sure.
You know, it's a touching one when Juan Soto goes 5 minutes on a Kansas City Chief with nothing but praise.
Former congratulations. Queef. Former queef.
Congratulations, Alex Smith, on just coming back and everything else. All right, that'll be it for this edition of the Autumn Windbags. We'll be back next week. And until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Listening to the Autumn Windbags, really appreciate it. Of course, remember to rate, subscribe, and comment on all the platforms. Go ahead and check us out on YouTube as well. Until next week, later.